Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 92 event, which takes place in Salt Lake City, Utah. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we had no premium bets for UFC 201, and we lost our one-unit underdog free play on Christine Stanley for Invicta FC 18 the night before. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 92 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a heavyweight attraction between Chase Sherman, who is 9-1, and Justin Ledet, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Ledet -150, the comeback on Sherman at +110. Looking over at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, it is currently Ledet -155, Sherman is +135. Now, there was early action coming in on Sherman, the line dropped a little bit, action came back in on Ledet, so there is two-way action on this fight. And if I had to guess, the next move in this fight would probably be back towards the dog again as well. I think he's just a little bit more popular amongst the MMA fans out there that know the sport fairly well. I think Sherman does have that kind of hype coming into this fight. He's still relatively young at 26. And, of course, he's been featured on Access TV fights as well. So the guy is an experienced veteran training out of Mississippi with Belcher and crew out there. So he's got somewhat of a – I mean, not – a marquee training camp, but he definitely has a UFC vet that's put together a pretty good camp in his experience that should definitely help Sherman improve his career as it goes here. So just getting into the background of both these guys real quick, since I'm on Sherman already, I'll start with him. I mean, he's an athlete is what he is. He's a former football player. He's got that kind of explosive power that you want to see from heavyweights. He's got nice hand speed, but there is some question marks as well. I mean, he's a striking based fighter. He definitely has that skill to knock people out, but he also works takedowns. He also has those trip takedowns, and he can get the fight to the ground and control the fight a little bit from top, do some damage there as well. Doesn't really look for the sub that much, being that he is from a Belcher camp, so he does need to work on his ground game a little bit more. He's more of a striking-based fighter for sure. But my question marks with Sherman is his chin. I mean, he has been tagged. He has been knocked out in the past before as well. In his pro career, he hasn't been out of the first round. Now, as an amateur, he has, but again, a lot of those were like three-minute fights. But as a pro, he hasn't been tested, and he hasn't gone to deep waters a little bit. And from what I've seen with Sherman, I think he's got a little bit of quit in him, to be honest with you. And again, he has got kind of a questionable chin. So he's more of a front runner, and if he can't get the job done early, I think he's susceptible to getting beat as the fight goes on. Ledet, on the other hand, he's an undefeated prospect. His background really is boxing. I mean, he's a pro boxer. He's got that experience. I believe he's 5-0 as a boxer with three decisions and a couple knockouts. So he does have that in his resume as well, but he's a striking-based fighter in MMA. I know he was fighting at light heavyweight at times, and now he's kind of filled his body in a little bit to put on some weight, and he's fighting at heavyweight. And with that, it's actually going to give him some speed. I think he's got pretty good footwork, some nice movement, and of course, his striking is based on his boxing, which is fast, and he's got some powerful hands to go along with it as well. I'm impressed with Ledet's clinch work. I mean, he's got a devastating knee attack. And on the ground, he's not bad, honestly. I think he's got a pretty good submission game. The problem is he is susceptible to getting taken down. I mean, he can be put on his back, and he does need some more work in that area. So his takedown defense can improve a little bit. But once you get him on his back, believe it or not, for having that more of a striking background, he does look for submissions. He's capable of looking for those arm bars, looking for the triangles, and then kind of scrambling up back into a better spot, either on top or just back to his feet and striking. So it's not like you can hold Ledet down easily and control him and just dominate him on the ground. He does fight to get back up or fights for that submission, and he's dangerous wherever the fight takes place. So Ledet is a pretty complete, well-rounded fighter. He does need to work on those areas that I mentioned, though, as well. So what this comes down to, I think Sherman's probably going to be the front runner here again. I think Sherman's going to look to maybe get some takedowns. These guys will start off banging, of course. They're going to start off striking, but I think as it goes a little bit, Sherman might go for that trip takedown, get Ledet on his back. I think Ledet's going to kind of scramble back up to his feet if he doesn't finish Sherman on the ground, and then eventually finish Sherman up where it stands. So I am picking Ledet. I do think Ledet is the better fighter overall in this spot. And I think he's going to probably get tested by Sherman, but it's a test he will ultimately pass. So I think Ledet's a pretty good prospect, the heavyweight, and stylistically he's going to be a tough matchup for a lot of fighters. But again, he's kind of young enough in his career that I think he's going to get better as well. So looking forward to seeing the progression of Ledet, and I think he is going to win this fight.
Definitely an interesting matchup between two UFC newcomers. Now, if this is a pure stand-up fight, I definitely favor Ledet. Now, Sherman, if you go back and watch his film, he's actually a pretty solid overall fighter. He doesn't panic in there, especially when he's facing guys that are green and just swinging haymakers from the hip at him. He actually has pretty good composure on the feet. He basically weathers that early storm and then finishes guys. He has good power. He has decent jabs. He has decent low kicks. He's finished fights with low kicks. So Ledet does need to be careful, especially if he has more of a boxing-centric approach. He'll have to watch out for those. And as Nick mentioned, Sherman does have some trip takedowns, although doesn't really offer much on the ground. So I'm not too concerned about the takedown here. And the one thing that I did notice is Sherman does not have very good striking defense. It's more based on just not panicking. Like, he's able to stay in the pocket and fire back, but he can get hit. Obviously, he got blasted by a spinning back fist from now UFC middleweight Alex Nicholson and finished in a fight pretty quickly. But I think that was kind of an early stoppage if you go back and watch it. That being said, Justin Ledet has serious boxing credentials. I mean, this is a guy that was a light heavyweight, and then he started packing on a little bit of weight to move up to heavyweight, and over that time period, he started doing some boxing and was pretty successful with it. So he definitely does have some excellent striking skills, and Sherman primarily does look to stand and bang against people, and I think that that is going to be a big problem for him here. And even though Sherman probably will have about 20 pounds on Ledet, I don't think he'll have actually much size in terms of height and reach. So Ledet should be fine. He shouldn't get bullied in there. And I think I agree with Nick. I think Ledet finds a home on Sherman's chin at some point and probably puts him out near the end of the first round or maybe the second round. So my pick is also Justin Ledet. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Cub Swanson, who is 22-7, taking on Tetsuya Kawajiri, who is 35-9-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Swanson -210 to come back on Kawajiri at +160. That's right, you heard right. Swanson opened at -210. The betting community out there just swallowed that line up, thought it was ridiculous, and obviously it was, because right now Swanson is sitting at -400. It looks like a cross market price. There are some 370s, 380s out there. Well, actually, now looking across the Don Best screen, looks like there's some 350s, 340s out there as well. So depending on where you look, it's anywhere between 3.5 to 1, 4 to 1. I guess it is a little bit more reasonable in some ways, but my concern here is that, I mean, Swanson stylistically in fights against better wrestlers has been put on his back in the past, and that's kind of cost him. That's been his kryptonite in some ways, and Kawajiri is going to come out and do exactly that, wrestle. I mean, he's got no shot at really standing and trading with Swanson. Obviously, we know Swanson is definitely the better striker in this spot. He's the better fighter in this spot overall, especially right now. I mean, he's still younger. Both these guys have had an extremely – you know, a large amount of fights in their, throughout their careers, both from Swanson and Kawajiri. Of course, Kawajiri has had even more fights because of his Japan career and all that. But I mean, they're definitely veterans that have put mileage on their bodies through MMA. I mean, been in some wars. So it's not like neither one of these guys are young, but still Swanson's 6 years younger in actual age. And again, in MMA years, they're both a little bit older now. So both of these guys are not in their prime. Both of these guys, I think, have hit somewhat of a decline spot, even though Swanson not long ago was looking like he was climbing up the ladder and it was looking like he was in his prime or peaking in his career. I'm not so sure anymore because, I mean, it's one of those things that mentally, I think once you get to a certain spot and you get in the mix, I think at having that total shot or getting in that situation and then all of a sudden you take a couple losses, I think it brings you back down to reality. I'm not sure how much motivation's there, but I should say that Swanson did look good bouncing back against Hakran Diaz, which is a tough, tough fight. So it was a big quality win for him. So you can't write Swanson off quite yet. And his matchup against Kawajiri here is definitely good for him. I mean, if he can fend off Kawajiri's grappling ability, he's probably going to knock Kawajiri out. If not, he probably obviously takes the decision here, but he has to worry about Kawajiri taking his back, taking him down, just wrestling and grappling the entire fight. And I think Kawajiri is going to push that pace. It's going to be tough for him for three rounds to do so. So I think that's what everybody's coming in on Swanson. They believe he's going to be able to sprawl brawl and probably knock Kawajiri out. I understand it. I think that's probably how it goes as well. So I am going to pick Swanson. But I think everybody being overly confident like they are, man, it kind of worries me a little bit. And Swanson could lose this fight on the cards. He could get even possibly get submitted by Kawajiri because Kawajiri has somewhat of an underrated submission game as well. So on the ground, Kawajiri does have the advantage in this fight, but I'm just not so sure it's going to be enough time on the ground for him to actually win his fight. So I am going to pick Swanson like everybody else. I just think that where the line is right now is a little bit sick, and I think that Kawajiri might have a better shot than everybody thinks, but Swanson is definitely the pick.
It's pretty obvious that I'm going to be leaning Cub Swanson here. He looked great in his last fight against Hakran Diaz, a guy that actually has a very similar fighting style to Kawajiri, basically a younger version of Kawajiri. Although, one thing I will say is Kawajiri is a little bit more aggressive with his takedowns than Diaz. So you saw that in Kawajiri's last fight against Dennis Bermudez. He actually came out aggressively, got in Bermudez's face, actually took Bermudez down quickly. But then that stopped working. Bermudez turned the tides on him, started wrestling him. Now, I don't expect Cub Swanson to do that and wrestle him. I think Swanson just wants to keep this fight standing and just start tattooing Kawajiri. And on the feet, Kawajiri should be no match whatsoever for Swanson. Swanson is a solid technical striker, has good power with both hands. He has nasty, nasty knockout ability. And I can definitely see Kawajiri getting finished here, especially if he does not just try to hang on to Cub Swanson at all times, close the distance, take away his power. And I can kind of see a path to victory here for Kawajiri. I mean, he's going to need to wrestle a lot. He's going to need to get some dominant positions. He's going to need to force Swanson to make mistakes. And it's possible. I mean, Swanson was out-grappled by Chad Mendes way back in the day, and then early in Swanson's UFC run, he did lose a decision, or he got submitted by Ricardo Lamas because he kind of got overconfident with his ground game, and Lamas caught him in an arm triangle choke. So there's a path to victory for Kawajiri, but it more involves Kawajiri being able to utilize his wrestling for three straight rounds. And I just don't think he's going to be able to do that. I think Swanson has done his homework on Kawajiri. He understands how Kawajiri closes the distance, some of the tricks he uses. And I expect Swanson to really punish him along the way because Kawajiri really hasn't changed much over the last 5 or 10 years as a fighter. Maybe he's a little more focused on the wrestling now and not as willing to engage on the feet. And I think Swanson forces him to engage, and I think he panics a little bit, and I think Swanson can do some serious damage there. So I expect Cub Swanson to win here. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we also have a featherweight contest between Teruto Ishihara, who is 9-2-2, taking on Horacio Gutierrez, who is 3-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Ishihara -260, the comeback in Gutierrez at +180. Right now, looking over to Five Dimes, it is Ishihara -240, the comeback in Gutierrez is +200. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There is two way action coming in on this fight. Tough one, man. I mean, both these guys are similar in a lot of ways. I mean, Ishihara is definitely the more popular fighter right now. I mean, social media, he's one of the, most unique, I guess, posters on you know, Instagram and Twitter or whatnot. But fans are definitely getting behind him and enjoy his tweets and his craziness that he puts out there. And believe it or not, that has definitely had an impact in his popularity and in a way the betting line as well. I mean, it is what it is. I know it sounds a little bit crazy, but when a fighter becomes that popular or starts gaining popularity, of course, the betting line is going to be a little bit higher based on that alone. But as far as stylistical matchup goes here with Gutierrez, it's a tough one because both these guys like to stand and bang. Both these guys have enough power to put each other out. And that's what they look to do. They don't really like to fiddle around the ground much. So both of them have a puncher shot in this spot. I mean, they have the ability to knock anyone out in the division. I mean, they have that much power. So I'm not as confident as everybody else here. I mean, I think Ishihara at this point is a little bit better, in his career. And I think he's just a little bit more well-rounded than Gutierrez. And Gutierrez, of course, in the Ultimate Fighter finale, he ended up suffering a loss to Barzola. He got out wrestled in that spot, and that's what cost him the decision. So he definitely needs to work on his takedown defense and improve that area, because on the feet, I mean, he is a handful to deal with, but it kind of falls right into Ishihara's game plan as well. So you're going to see an exciting fight here, because these guys are going to slug it out and they're going to bang. And that's exactly what they like to do. I mean, if you look back recently at Rivera versus Perez, that craziness that took place in that fight, I could see this fight kind of starting off as nutty as that was at one point. So this is going to be fireworks here, and I'm excited to see this fight because these guys are definitely going to stand and bang. So I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Ishihara, but it's not a confident pick. I think it is a dog or pass situation. You can't really lay the juice on this fight because it should be a little bit closer than what the odds currently indicate. And when you got two sluggers like this, it's not worth, you know, obviously laying over 2-1 on one of these guys. So it's a dog or pass situation, but I'm going to slightly lean towards Ishihara because I do think just his overall game is just a tad bit ahead of Gutierrez, but that's the only reason right now. So that's going to be my pick, but it's dog or pass for sure.
My, how short people's memories are. I mean, if you go back, Ishihara was an underdog in his UFC debut, which was a draw. He was an underdog in his win, in his last win over Juicy J. And Gutierrez was a big time favorite in his, bout for the tough Latin America finale. So realistically, you know, it's not that long ago that all the hype was behind Gutierrez and there was no hype behind Ishihara, but one knockout for Ishihara and then one underwhelming performance by Gutierrez against a guy that was able to lay and pray him for three rounds. And the tides have turned. Now, this time around, Ishihara Gutierrez, they're going to stand and bang. Ishihara has a very exciting striking style, very aggressive. He looks to land big left hooks. He has a right jab. He has heavy left kicks, both low and high. And he is not afraid to use them. He also sets up a lot of stuff with feints. He will charge forward if his opponent is not attacking him, because primarily Ishihara's biggest strength is counter-striking. He lands a good left hook on the inside that he has used to drop multiple opponents in the UFC already. But if you look at Gutierrez, he actually, you know, he's been training in the United States for like 3 or 4 years now. He has lightning-quick hands. He has pretty good kicks. His only issue was Barzola was able to take him down repeatedly and stifle his striking attack. Gutierrez is actually a very dangerous striker with heavy hands. He's actually probably just as technical, if not more so, than Ishihara. It's just all the hype's behind Ishihara. He's a fan favorite. He's posting all these goofy things on social media. It's taken off on Twitter and the MMA sites. So I think people are really overlooking Gutierrez. This is not a situation where Ishihara is going to be looking for takedowns. Gutierrez is a live dog here, and with the way Ishihara slows down in fights because he puts so much of everything into everything he throws, I think Gutierrez has a really good shot as long as he weathers the early storm and the early power surge from Ishihara. There's a really good chance that Gutierrez is going to land some good strikes in this fight, and he can take over potentially early in the fight with his hand speed and then mid to late in the fight with the way Ishihara slows down. So I actually think Gutierrez has a really good shot of pulling off the upset here. So Gutierrez is going to be my pick. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have David Taimur, who is 4-1, taking on UFC newcomer Jason Novelli, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Taimur minus 140, the comeback of Novelli, even money. And right now it is actually Taimur minus 135, Novelli is plus 115. So another spot where the line basically stayed the same, two-way action coming in, line margins have tightened up a little bit as well. Man, this is a great fight. It really is. I mean, Novelli's one of these guys that's making his UFC debut, but he deserves to be in the UFC. The guy is a very talented fighter. It's crazy to think. I mean, he's 37 years old. So you would think, oh man, this guy's definitely, what's he got left in his career? What's he got left to do in the UFC? But he's a lot younger than that as far as actually getting in there and just looking at his, the way he fights, the energy that he has, his career. He hasn't been in a tremendous amount of wars. I mean, he's had, I believe 13 fights or somewhere around there, just about, of pro fighting in his MMA career. So it's not like he's had a lot of mileage on his body right now. So Novelli, even at age 37, I think is actually the other way. A lot of times we're saying, oh, with MMA years, he's beyond that point, where Novelli is not actually in MMA years. I think he's actually looks to me younger than 37 and he fights like it as well. So he's an experienced, savvy vet and he's a well-rounded fighter, deserves his shot in the UFC. He's got Titan fighting experience, actually. He's a solid regional resume overall. I mean, he's got some quality wins on his resume. But there is a bad loss kind of on there. I mean, Phoenix Jones, Ben Fodor, though he just fought his brother Carlos on a card recently, obviously, this past weekend. So he's not bad, but losing to submission by Phoenix Jones, it doesn't really sit well with me overall. But it was just a spot that he got, you know, put in a bad position, made a mistake on the ground, and he got caught in that fight. So I guess you can forgive him because he's a better fighter than that. So that is kind of a head scratcher there because I don't think he should lose to a guy like that. But outside of that, I mean, if you look at his performances and the way he just is when he's in the cage, in the ring, whatever it may be, the guy is definitely a talented fighter. So he does have a background in wrestling and boxing along with BJJ. He's a very complete overall fighter. He's long and rangy. And he's got clean technical skill, whether it's standing, whether it's on the ground, anywhere that the fight takes place, he's not a sloppy fighter. And he's got power to go along with it. He's got finishing ability. So Novelli is a very tough out. Now, Taimur, on the other hand, is another one of these guys that he's a tough 22 veteran. I think he's been nothing but impressive. Even on the show, he was impressive to me. And I think he's at that point of his career where he's young enough. He's only 27 years old, where he's getting better fight by fight, trains in Sweden with Gustafsson and crew over there as well. So he is getting some solid experience, good training partners to go along with it over there as well. And he is rounding out his game. Now, he's more of a Muay Thai specialist, so he's a striking-based fighter. But he's been working on his takedown defense, working his ground game as well. He's got pretty decent sub-defense, good, solid takedown defense at this point. But he definitely needs to keep working in those areas for sure. But he is a very good striker and a powerful and effective striker as well. So this is an interesting fight. I think that you got to give the edge to Taimur on the feet overall. I think he's just a little bit better than Novelli when it does stay standing. Now, Novelli is going to have a 4-inch reach advantage, so that could get interesting, especially in the clinch, because Novelli does deliver some punishment in that area as well. So Taimur has to be cautious and careful here. But I still think that his speed and his power on the feet and the way he kind of mixes everything else is going to probably be enough to sneak by Novelli and get a close decision, hard-fought battle type of win on the cards. Or possibly get the finish along the way, but I think more so than anything else, it's probably hits the scorecards and Taimur wins a close decision. So this is going to be war. It's going to be fight of the night kind of potential type of fight. So I do think that these guys are going to stand and bang for the most part, and I think it should be a fun fight. I am picking Taimur to win this fight, but man, it's a hard-fought battle, and I expect Novelli to actually have a pretty decent little UFC career.
This one's tricky. I mean, these guys are evenly matched, but Jason Novelli's making his UFC debut and he's 37 years old already. That's ancient in the lightweight division. Now, granted, he doesn't fight like he's 37, but it's definitely a big question mark entering the UFC for the first time. Now, David Taimur, we saw him one time inside the octagon outside of The Ultimate Fighter and he looked tremendous. I mean, he went out there and he took care of business against a bigger, longer opponent. He had a good striking advantage there, and then he was able to avoid multiple takedown attempts because of really good footwork, and then he was just able to punish with kicks and punches, eventually setting up a really impressive second round TKO. So Taymor has already established himself inside the octagon, and he looked really good on The Ultimate Fighter as well. He just had an injury on the show that kept him from advancing. So he's a guy that potentially could have won that season. Now, Novelli making his UFC debut, he's a solid overall striker, so he should be mildly competitive on the feet with Taymor, although I should expect Taymor to have the edge there. Novelli trains out of the Portland area with like Pat Healy's gym, so he should have plenty of good training partners preparing him for this opportunity, and he does have a decent ground game. It's not amazing, but it is better than Taymor's. It's just all about whether or not Novelli's takedowns are really good. If he can close the distance against Taymor and get him on his back, force him into a defensive position, then Novelli has a decent shot of pulling off this upset. But I think that's easier said than done. Taymor has excellent footwork. He has good use of spatial awareness and distance. And I think that he's going to make it a lot more difficult for Novelli to get some of his more active tools going with his ground advantage and perhaps his advantage in the clinch. I think it's going to be a lot more difficult for him to close the distance and get that stuff working than Novelli expects. So I'm siding with David Taymor. He impressed me with his UFC debut, and I think he impresses here as well. So my pick is going to be David Taymor. Now moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Victor Pesta, who is 10-2, taking on Marcin Tybura, who is 13-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Pesta, -130, the comeback on Tybura at -110. Not really too surprised, but the overall betting action came in on Tybura. He is now the favorite at -150. The comeback on Pesta is +130. I'm saying not too surprised because he's definitely the more popular, the more hyped fighter of the two. And I thought that it might flip according to the action as well overall. You know, it's a close fight. I understand what people are looking at because Tybura is a very technical fighter everywhere the fight takes place. I mean, the guy is pretty solid on the feet. He's good on the ground as well. I know that he kind of had a letdown performance against Johnson in his UFC debut, especially with all the hype that he had coming into that fight. I mean, a lot of people really thought that Tybura was one of these fighters that would come in and make an immediate impact in the UFC heavyweight division, and losing to a guy like Johnson, not that Johnson's bad because Johnson's a tough out, honestly, but you know, he shouldn't lose to a fighter like that. Now, Brian and I believe we both picked Johnson, if I'm not mistaken, last time. So we weren't surprised that Johnson ended up beating Tybura in that spot, but overall, tough fight, but he hung in there, made it close at least. It wasn't like a blowout type of decision for his UFC debut, and I know that he's got more to offer than that, and Pesta's definitely going to be another stern test for him. So Tybura is a very tough out, smart, savvy fighter. I do have some question marks about Tybura, especially as the fight progresses a little bit, but you can say a lot of the same things about Pesta. What it comes down to for me, though, I just think that Pesta is the younger fighter. I think he's got a lot more upside, and I think he's going to get better fight by fight. Unfortunately for him, in his last fight against Lewis, it didn't work out so well for him. I thought he was actually going to beat Lewis in that spot. He was looking good early on in that fight, but of course, as it went in the third round, Lewis ended up stopping him, finishing him off, and Pesta suffered that loss, which obviously has to drop your stock a little bit. I mean, Pesta was one of these guys that, again, even though he had a tough fight in his UFC debut, he hung in there, you saw some potential, and then he bounced back after that in his second fight, looked pretty good. So, and then against Lewis, he was actually favored, and we all know what kind of respect Lewis gets. So that tells you what Pesta is made of. I mean, he does definitely has the potential, and he's got the ability to keep on improving. But slowing down like he did, I mean, it was just so physically draining, I think, for him to get those takedowns against Lewis and hold him down. And then the mental stress of saying, thinking, okay, if this guy gets up, I could be in some serious trouble here as well, because the guy is a beast, obviously. So I think a lot of things went into that fight. Tybura is not going to be as dangerous as Derek Lewis, even though he's more technical in a lot of ways. And I think he's just as dangerous because of his technical skill set, even on the ground. But I still think Pesta's not going to, I guess, kind of wilt as easy as he did or fade as bad as he did in that fight. I think Pesta's going to show up and be a little bit better, and I think Pesta's actually going to be able to control the tempo of this fight a little bit more. I think he is, again, the younger, fresher fighter. I think he's going to be a little bit physically stronger than Zabur overall. He's going to be a little bit faster. I think he's going to be a little bit more explosive as well. So it is going to be a close fight, competitive fight, but I am leaning a little bit more towards Pesta. I think he bounces back off his Derek Lewis loss, and he performs a little bit better. I'm expecting Zabur to bounce back as well and be an interesting fight, but I think this is truly a coin flip type of fight. I could realistically see either guy pulling off this win. So with all the action coming in on Tabura, we're getting some buyback for sure on Pesta, and I think the sportsbooks are going to be fairly even by the time it's all sundown. And I wouldn't be surprised if it actually closes at exactly around a pick'em, because I think there will be some heavier action coming in back in on Pesta at some point or not too. So I'm going to lean with Pesta though. I'm going to go against the grain. I just think that, I mean, maybe people are counting him out a little bit too much from that Lewis loss, and I think he is better than what he showed in that fight, and I think he bounces back and gets the win here. So maybe by stoppage, maybe on the scorecards as well. For heavyweights, it's kind of tough to say that these days, that it could hit the scorecards, but this is definitely one of those fights that could possibly get there. So I'm going to pick Pesta to pull off the win here.
And I'm going to have to come in and disagree. My main thing here is Pesta is not a very talented striker. He is a very good grappler, and he showcased some solid grappling against Derek Lewis. It just was physically draining to take somebody that big down for two straight rounds. And that's what he was doing. He was in control of that fight, but he gave Lewis a small opening, then started just getting the crap kicked out of him. So against somebody like Marcin Tybura, I think Pesta might actually be in a little bit even more trouble, potentially, because Pesta is not very good on the feet at all. And I can see Tybura really working him over in the stand-up. And when Pesta goes for his takedowns and tries to get top position and tries to get some ground and pound in and all that stuff, Tybura actually is an extremely good grappler, especially for a heavyweight. So I can see Pesta getting himself in trouble on the ground. I think Tybura could potentially tie him in knots a little bit. I mean, Damian Grabowski's a pretty talented ground fighter with a solid submission game, and Tybura manhandled him on the canvas. So I can see Pesta working for takedowns, and then Tybura just leaps on his back, kind of like he did when Tim Johnson was shooting for a takedown. And Tybura is flexible, he's quick, he's opportunistic, and his main issue is he doesn't really have a great pace with his stand-up. He's sits back and lets his opponent dictate things too much. But Pesta's not the type of guy that's going to be pushing a high pace on the feet. I mean, he might try to wade in with some big punches early, but for the most part, Tybura should be able to dictate everything on the feet, because Pesta just is not a very technical striker. So I see Tybura having an advantage just about everywhere here, except maybe pure wrestling. And I just don't see Victor Pesta getting takedowns for three straight rounds, and I don't see him outstriking or outlanding Tybura either. So I think this is a Marcin Tybura's fight to lose, so I'm going to pick him. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division for the final preliminary card bout, we have Court McGee, who is 18-5, taking on Dominic Steele, who is 14-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open McGee -245 to come back on Steele at +175. Line margins have tightened up a bit. It's now McGee -210. The comeback is still +175 on Steele. And it seems like overall the bettors out there think it's a fair line. I think it is as well. Mainly because, I mean, McGee's at the point of his career where we could start seeing him start declining a little bit. I mean, he's been successful in the UFC, to say the least. I mean, look at some of the wins he has on his resume throughout his career. With specifically a guy like Whitaker, I think that was his last really big win. I mean, that was impressive. I mean, that was a war. Whitaker, we all know, is doing some really good things right now in middleweight. So, I mean, he's the type of fighter, McGee, that can rise to the occasion, faced really tough adversity, and he's come through more times than not. And it's because of his toughness and his skill set. I mean, obviously, he works at a great camp. At Pitt Elevated. I mean, he's definitely, this is in his backyard, by the way. We should say that. I mean, this is in Utah, and that's where obviously McGee trains at as well. So that's kind of neat for him. I think this is going to be, a little bit extra motivation for him to get the W in his backyard as well. But overall, like I said, throughout his career, McGee's been a pretty solid fighter, and it's because he is has a well-rounded skill set. I mean, the guy has good boxing on the feet, good accuracy, has some power to go along with it. And, of course, on the ground, he's capable of winning fights by submission. He has decent wrestling to go along with it. So he's a very capable fighter, and that's why he's had success. Steele, on the other hand, is kind of still trying to figure out what he can do in the UFC. I know he's had some okay performances, even in his last fight against Roberts. I know he lost that decision, but it was honestly better than expected, to say the least, because Roberts was a hyped prospect. A lot of people thought, including myself, thought Roberts would actually finish Steele along the way, and he did not. And then, obviously, Steele did get that finish, pretty impressive finish win over Kim. And then, but in his debut, he did lose to Zach Cummings there. And I think that's kind of the type of Dominic Steele that we can expect from time to time. His chin is a little bit suspect, and against pretty decent strikers, he'll get clipped and he'll go down. Now, again, against Roberts, he did survive some tough spots, but I still don't have 100% confidence in Steele's chin and the way he goes about things. I mean, Steele needs to win fights mainly in the UFC by out-grappling his opponents, by getting the takedowns, by grinding out his opponents. That's how he's going to have success in the UFC. I'm not so sure he can do that with McGee. McGee is definitely the better striker in this spot. I think he can land more punishment against Steele, and I think he probably can finish Steele along the way as well, because I think he can sprawl and brawl well enough that he does that. But both these guys coming off losses, obviously McGee coming off of a devastating loss for him. I mean, finally getting that KO loss in his career, you know, as far as his pro career goes or official career goes, it's kind of devastating for him for sure. And we don't know how he's going to respond again, because maybe he is hitting that decline spot. So Dominic Steele, even though he's not known for overwhelming people with the striking, he does have a little bit of power on the feet, and he could test McGee's chin. So there is that little bit of a concern. Maybe that chin doesn't recover well enough, and from here on out, McGee is definitely suspect in that area. We'll see. But Steele should not typically finish a guy like McGee. So I think McGee probably has a good shot to finish Steele. I think he can win on the scorecards as well. So it is McGee's fight to win or lose, is what I'm trying to say. I don't think he gets out wrestled in this spot severely by Steele and loses a decision on the cards or anything like that. So I think McGee does come away with a win here.
With McGee versus Steele, realistically, the best way for Steele to win is either to get a lot of slams and takedowns, or to just bum rush McGee early in the fight and try to put him away. And I don't think either of those strategies are going to be very effective against McGee. McGee has solid grappling, a good wrestling game, very good submission game. So if Steele is going to try to get the wrestling going, I see him getting thwarted quickly. And then with Steele's power, he did showcase a little bit of it in his last fight when he dropped Danny Roberts in one of the opening exchanges. So Court McGee is a little bit chinny, and he did get knocked out in his last fight, or TKO'd at least, by Ponzinibbio. So maybe Steele could swarm him and put him away. But again, I don't think he has the technique to really overwhelm McGee. McGee is a solid technical striker. He pushes a high pace. He has excellent conditioning. And those are all things that are trouble for Dominic Steele. Steele puts a lot behind his strikes. He runs out of steam quickly, and then he becomes just a pure heart, blood, and guts type of fighter, which he actually is still pretty effective with. I mean, that was a crazy close and exciting back-and-forth type of fight that he had against Danny Roberts. But Court McGee just is not going to have any of that. I mean, McGee is not going to get tired. McGee is not going to slow down. McGee is just going to get in Steele's face and just punch him over and over and over again. And I just don't see how Steele is going to be able to respond to that, because his wrestling isn't going to be super effective, and his striking is still rudimentary. It's sloppy. It's wild. So as long as McGee doesn't get clipped and put out, then he should run roughshod here over Dominic Steele. And I think he potentially could even finish him as long as he pushes a high enough pace. So my pick is going to be Court McGee. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have a women's strawweight bout between Marina Moroz, who is 7-1, and Danielle Taylor, who is also 7-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Moreau's minus 300, the comeback on Taylor plus 220. This line has dropped a little bit. It is now Moreau's minus 240. The comeback on Taylor is plus 200. So 20-cent drop on the dog, and line margins have tightened up a little bit as well. I don't think it's a huge, huge shocker there, because it seems like even though Moreau's has that kind of respect that she gets from her debut win over Calderwood, I think since that time people have kind of lightened up a little bit on her and think that she might be a little bit overrated. But I do believe the Moreau's is a pretty talented fighter and the type of woman that's going to get better and better as her career progresses in the UFC as well, more confidence and just kind of just more octagon time, which is needed at this stage as well. So Moreau's is definitely a talented fighter at 115 pounds, and I think that she will stay towards the top of the ladder here. So making her UFC debut for Taylor as a short notice replacement for Kish, actually, it's a pretty tough task. I mean, you're fighting one of the best girls, I think, at 115 pounds right away. So Taylor is a good fighter. I mean, overall, she's a Muay Thai specialist. She has some BJJ experience as well. I believe she's a blue belt in jiu-jitsu. And outside of the cage, actually, you know that she's a tough woman. I mean, she's a corrections officer in LA. So she's just one of those, I think, people that, I mean, across the board, she just shows toughness in all areas. I mean, in and outside of the cage. So I think she's definitely a girl that could make some waves in the UFC, but she's small for the weight class. I think she's better suited to fight at 105 pounds more than 115 pounds because she's only 5'2", or even listed at 5' at some spots. So she's definitely tiny for the division. But as far as a fighter goes, she's a short, powerful striker. I mean, again, I mentioned she has some jiu-jitsu experience as well. She has some wrestling to go along with it. So she's a pretty complete, well-rounded fighter. And I do like watching her fight because I think she's an exciting woman. I mean, she's definitely quick. And again, she's explosive and powerful. She's able to knock people out with one punch, and then she flurries and follows up a lot of times as well. Even on the ground, she has the ability to take the fight to the floor and do some damage there as well. So she does have some good work from the top. You know, I mean, it is a tough fight because I could see Taylor maybe getting lucky and landing a punch on Rose and putting her out. I mean, just one of those one punch type of scenarios that Rose gets clipped and then, you know, Taylor maybe pounces and finishes there. But outside of that, I think Rose is just her physical size is going to be a little bit too much for Taylor. I think Moreau's going to kind of bully Taylor around. Taylor has that speed and that footwork that she's going to be moving a lot, but I think Moreau's is going to kind of cut the ring off a little bit, cut the cage off, I should say, and then possibly get some takedowns or even just with her length strike well against Taylor, because at times Taylor does not be as active as you like to see in a fight. So I think Moreau's could kind of push a little bit of a higher pace. And again, their ground game is definitely a lot better for Moreau's as well. So it's her fight to win or lose, really, especially with Taylor coming in on short notice. I think her stamina should be enough to make it three rounds, but still Moreau's has all the advantages in this fight overall. I mean, she has the experience thus far in the UFC. I think, again, her size is going to make an impact here, and that she is the more skilled fighter on the ground, and she's going to have the reach on the feet as well. So it's Moreau's fight to win or lose. Taylor is a pretty exciting fighter, and I'm glad that the UFC kind of called her in here. But again, I hope that eventually they expand on the women's divisions and open things up a little bit more, because a fighter like Taylor could definitely make an impact at 105 pounds. So we'll see how that goes. But for now, it's hard not to pick Moreau's in this spot.
Yeah, I like Marina Moreau's too. The main thing here is Danielle Taylor's taken this fight on super short notice, about a week in total, and she's taking on one of the best women strawweights on the planet. So it's just a very tall task to overcome on such short notice. Now, Taylor is a talented fighter. She is tiny, but she packs some serious wallop in her fists. She has good power. If she can connect with Moreau's chin solidly, she could put her away, potentially. Now, it's not a given, but Moreau's did get knocked down by Valerie Letourneau. So, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. And Taylor does have a decent grappling game and wrestling game, kind of more of a body lock takedown type of fighter. But if she does that, I think Moreau's, with how nasty her arm bars can be, would just put her in one of those. So I don't think the ground game is a threat whatsoever. It's just the power. And even there, Moreau's does come from a solid Ukrainian boxing background, and I don't think that she's going to be that threatened by Taylor on the feet either. Taylor is actually, she kind of sits back and then explodes forward with like one punch. And if she hurts her opponent, then she'll turn up the volume. But until then, she's more of a one-off type of striker. And I don't think that's going to be too much of an issue for Meroz to deal with. I mean, Meroz is a solid overall striker. She's long. She has a good jab. She has good technique, a good pace. She can go all three rounds. So as far as that goes, I think Danielle Taylor's just biting off a little bit more than she can chew. I'm sure she wishes the UFC had an atomweight division because she would definitely belong there. But she's just too small and too short notice. And I think Marina Meroz looks pretty solid here. So I'm going to pick her. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have Trevor Smith, who is 13-6, taking on Joseph Gigliotti, UFC newcomer, who is 7-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Gigliotti, minus 155, the comeback on Smith at plus 115. Right now it's actually 135 for Gigliotti, and Smith is plus 115. So, again, line margins have tightened up a little bit. Line is staying pretty steady. Tough fight. I mean, Smith, of course, is more of the UFC veteran. I mean, he's been around the sport for a while. We all know him from Strikeforce, from, you know, his experience in the past as well before he entered the UFC. And the guy is a very good, solid fighter in a lot of ways. I'm questioning that a little bit as far as his chin goes, because obviously his chin has issues and he's been knocked out, I believe, four times throughout his career. And in the past, he's shown some signs of cardio issues. I mean, he just one of those guys that does slow down as the fight goes, and it doesn't seem to improve all that much, although he has shown a little bit more heart and toughness, and his cardio has been a little bit better since he made his UFC debut. I think he's actually elevated his game to a whole nother level, and he's taking it a lot more serious, which is good. That's what you want to see in a fighter. So Smith has improved since he's entered the UFC, and he's had some pretty tough fights. So he's dangerous, man, especially on the ground. I mean, we see that his on the feet, he even has a little bit of power. And he likes to kind of push forward a little bit, but he is slow. And that could come back to haunt him against Gigliotti in this spot here. But on the ground, definitely Smith has an edge over most people. He's very dangerous, and he could get the submission win or even grind people out. So that's what Smith's going to look to do here. He's not going to want to stand and bang with Gigliotti. He's going to want to get this fight to the floor, try to submit Gigliotti. If not, at least grind him out a little bit. But getting it to Gigliotti, he is making his UFC debut. He does have a wrestling background. So for Smith, it's not going to be easy to get him to the floor, because Gigliotti can probably sprawl and brawl pretty well. Overall, Gigliotti's a short, stocky, powerful middleweight. I mean, he's a wrestler, so he's the type of guy that has that kind of grind him out aggressive style. And on the feet, he's got speed to go along with some really devastating power and aggression. So on the feet, he ends, you know, people's night with one punch. That's the type of fighter he is, with his speed and accuracy. And on the ground, he's actually pretty aggressive as well. I mean, he does look for some takedowns from time to time, obviously. He's got good ground and pound, and he's aggressive with the submission game as well. He's got some pretty nasty chokes. So he's a pretty complete, well-rounded fighter. He trains out of a good camp in Power MMA in Arizona, but he is still a little bit raw and a bit small for 185 pounds. So I think that's what's going to come into play here a little bit. I mean, can Smith kind of be a little bit more physical? Can Smith get this fight to the ground against Gigliotti? Can he just kind of grind Gigliotti out here? That's how he's going to win this fight, or possibly submit him. It's possible because of the size difference here, I think, more than anything else. But it's going to be a tough fight for Smith because, again, Gigliotti has that speed, has that explosiveness that's really given Smith problems in the past. So I could see Gigliotti catching him, knocking him out. I could even see him maybe getting in one of those chokes that I was talking about earlier. Smith is not the easiest guy to sub, but Gigliotti has that kind of power with some skill and technique to go along with it that if he catches Smith's neck, he could definitely sub him as well. So tough fight. I mean, I could see it realistically going both ways. That's why it is a pick-em type of fight. But with all that being said, I'm going to lean a little bit more towards the newcomer here. I just think that he's younger, he's fresher, he has a style that could give Smith a lot of problems here. He could clip him, could catch him on the chin as well, and I think put him out. So I'm going to lean towards Gigliotti a little bit more, and I think he's going to be successful in his UFC debut over a pretty solid veteran in Smith.
This fight is a little tricky. I mean, Gigliotti is a solid prospect, trains out of Power MMA. He's entering the UFC with a bit of a wave of hype. He had some impressive performances in World Series of Fighting, RFA, which were his two toughest opponents, and he passed those tests. And Gigliotti, he's young, he's aggressive, he's powerful, and he has a pretty strong grappling game. So he kind of enters the UFC as the full package. His biggest issue is he's small for the division. At middleweight, he is definitely more compact. He's going to be giving up about 4 inches in height, about 6 inches in reach to Trevor Smith. Now, that shouldn't be too much of an issue because Trevor Smith isn't exactly the fastest guy. So with Gigliotti's youthful explosiveness, he should be able to just charge forward on the feet and potentially take Smith out. I mean, when Smith gets defeated in the UFC, it's been by really quick knockout by somebody that was just going right in his face, like Chao Magalhaes. Now, when the people are more patient with him, then you can have those kind of more drawn-out brawls or fights that turn into, just all-heart kind of scraps. And those are the fights that Smith does great in. If he can slow the pace down a little bit, maybe grind it out, get the fight in the clinch, get the fight to the floor. Now, Gigliotti is strong on the ground, but so is Trevor Smith. That's definitely where he is strongest. He has a solid wrestling game, excellent jiu-jitsu. So if I'm Gigliotti, I want to keep this fight standing, and I want to get in Smith's face, and I want to smash him, because Smith's chin is definitely a question mark at this point. And if Gigliotti lands, he definitely has the power to put him out. So that's absolutely where my focus would be. Because if this fight goes to the floor, all bets are off, because Trevor Smith is probably the more technical, experienced guy there. And Gigliotti could find himself in some unique positions he's not used to. He's not used to being on his back. He's not used to losing scrambles. He's probably not used to being in tight submission holds in an actual UFC fight. So I can see Gigliotti getting in trouble if it goes to the floor, but if it stays standing, I think he just steamrolls Smith. So I'm going to pick Gigliotti, but I will definitely exercise caution here. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Santiago Ponzinibbio, who is 23-3, taking on Zach Cummings, who is 19-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Ponzinibbio -175, the comeback on Cummings at +135. Right now, looking over at the line at 5 dimes, it is Ponzinibbio -150, the comeback on Cummings is at +130. So line margins have tightened up a little bit and basically staying the same where it opened. 5 cent drop on the dog now, but earlier there was a higher spot. I mean, Ponzinibbio did climb up at first. The action did come in his way. So they are getting two-way action on this spot in this fight. And again, it's understandable because you got two quality fighters that are going to go at it here. Ponzinibbio, obviously a little bit more popular, a little bit more mainstream, I think, to most fans out there. I think they think he is the better fighter. It's just one of those weird spots where throughout his whole career, Cummings has kind of flown under the radar. And even though he's a quality fighter and he's had some pretty good success and fought some very talented fighters, even outside of the UFC, he's just never been one of those guys that the fans got behind and were kind of crazy about. But Cummings is definitely a very solid, well-rounded, savvy vet. And of course, again, Ponzinibbio, a little bit more of the flashy fighter. He's more of the finisher, more of the striker, more of the guy that you kind of, I guess, enjoy watching, because, I mean, he goes out there and most of the time he's able to knock his opponents out with his striking skill and, you know, finish off the fight. So people do like that. Not that Cummings doesn't finish fights, because he can definitely finish his share of fights either on the ground or on the feet as well. But Ponzinibbio just, I guess, has that little bit more aggression and that kind of killer instinct on the feet that is more attractive to the fans. So he's getting a little bit more hype overall, which he deserves, because I'll tell you what, he's looked pretty good. I mean, Ponzinibbio, outside of that crazy fight that he lost, obviously, to Larkin, he's actually bounced back well. He has a solid win over Stahl in his last fight against McGee. McGee, again, not an easy guy to finish, and he was able to get rid of him pretty easy. So I think Ponzinibbio, training with American Top Team, has actually improved his game. He stepped it up. He's more than up overall just a great striker right now. I mean, he has the takedown defense to make life miserable for most people. His submission defense has always been pretty solid, and that's continuing to improve. So he's just getting better training at a good camp, and that is definitely a good sign for him. But I still think Cummings is a tough matchup, man. I really do. I think that even though Ponzinibbio is the better striker, I think Cummings can actually hang with Ponzinibbio on the feet a little bit, and he's obviously has underrated knockout power to go along with it. And if there's any question marks or any flaws against Ponzinibbio, I do think at times it is his chin. I mean, he has been tagged against pretty solid fighters and been put out, of course. So it's not like he's losing to bums or anything like that. But Ponzinibbio, his chin is a little bit questionable, and Cummings does have enough knockout power that's going to be interesting. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see Cummings actually knock Ponzinibbio out, as crazy as that sounds. I think more than anything else, this fight probably hits the scorecards, and it's going to be a close decision. But outside of that, that is a flaw or that is a concern for Ponzinibbio that I have. Now, Cummings, on the other hand, is a pretty tough guy. He's a hard guy to finish. I mean, he's only been finished a couple times in his career, and that was actually by submission. And one of those submission losses coming to Gunnar Nelson, which can basically sub pretty much most people at welterweight. So that's not even a very bad loss overall. But Cummings has looked pretty good. I mean, his win over Dalby, I didn't think he was going to win that fight as impressively as he did. So that was actually a pretty solid win as well. Even though Dalby doesn't get a ton of respect out there, I think this is still a very solid performance. And you can see the improvement of Cummings' overall game. I mean, I know he's working with James Krause and crew, you know, and he's been putting a lot of time in, and they got a lot of good vibes going in that camp right now over there at Glory. I mean, they work hard. They work together well. They have that confidence about them too. So there's a lot of good things coming from that camp, and it's kind of rubbing off on all the fighters here. And I think Cummings right now is at an all-time high in confidence, and he really believes that he belongs and he can make a run towards the 170-pound title. So this is an interesting fight. I'm going to pick Cummings to win this fight because I think on the feet, again, it's going to be close. I know I give the edge to Ponzinibbio, but Cummings can do some damage on the feet as well. But more than that, I think even though Ponzinibbio is tough to take down, Cummings will probably pin Ponzinibbio up against cage a little bit, go for some of those takedowns as well on the ground. And if it does get to the ground, I mean, Cummings' jiu-jitsu game is very underrated as well. He could finish this fight on the ground. I wouldn't be shocked there either, even though I do think he probably has a better shot of kind of grinding Ponzinibbio and stealing this on the card. So I'm expecting a very competitive fight, very close decision, but I think it's realistically a fight that Cummings can win on the scorecard. So I'm going to go his way.
And I'm going to have to disagree. Santiago Ponzinibbio, to me, is a really talented fighter in the welterweight division. I mean, so is Zach Cummings. I mean, these guys are both very good. And I did pick Cummings to defeat Nicholas Dalby in his last fight, but that was more of a fade on Dalby a little bit than more a pick for Cummings. Now, with Ponzinibbio, the thing that stands out to me specifically was his win against Sean Strickland, who is a very talented fighter in the UFC welterweight division. He just stuffed every takedown attempt just about, and then just battered his opponent on the feet for three straight rounds of hard-fought action at a high pace. And that's just something that you don't expect somebody to be able to pull off at a high level, especially against somebody as talented as Sean Strickland. And to me, Zach Cummings isn't that much better than Sean Strickland. Cummings has a decent pace on the feet. He has some pop in his hands, but for the most part, his biggest strength is on the ground, where he has a very nasty submission game and some pretty good offensive wrestling, which he has showcased to help him win several fights, both in the middleweight and welterweight divisions throughout his career. I mean, he's fought as high up as light heavyweight before. So Cummings is a very big, strong guy. But Ponzinibbio has showcased some really good takedown defense, and I'm not quite convinced that Cummings is going to be the guy that takes Ponzinibbio down repeatedly. Like, we really haven't seen that other than his UFC debut against Ryan LaFleur, and that was 3 years ago. So this time around, you're looking at a Ponzinibbio that has looked really good against anybody that has tried to take him down in his last three wins. Sean Strickland tried to do it. He got battered on the feet. Andreas Stahl tried to mix in some takedowns. He got the crap kicked out of him. And then Court McGee tried to hold his own on the feet, was getting beat up, and then tried to mix in a couple takedowns from distance, got stuffed, and then knocked out. So Ponzinibbio has really kind of taken it to another level lately, and I've been so impressed with him. I mean, he throws fluid combinations, and once he starts to get locked in and into a groove, you're in big, big trouble. So the main thing Cummings needs to do on the feet is kind of disrupt Ponzinibbio's rhythm, because once he has a rhythm going, he's very, very difficult to stop, almost like a freight train on the feet. like the knockout is coming. And like realistically, the last time Ponzinibbio was in trouble was like against a really good striker like Lorenz Larkin, and Cummings just does not have that ability on the feet. He actually is a decent striker. It's just he's not an elite striker. He's not even, you know, Court McGee level, who is an above average striker in the welterweight division. So I really do think that unless Cummings is able to get this fight to the floor, he could be in for a world of hurt on the feet with how Ponzinibbio mixes up his punches and kicks and combinations so well. Even though Cummings has a terrific chin and some strong durability, I don't think he gets knocked out here, but I just see him getting battered like Sean Strickland did. So I'm going to pick Santiago Ponzinibbio to win a one-sided decision. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have Talis Lidis, who is 25-6, taking on Chris Camozzi, who is 24-10. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in latest, minus 270, the comeback at Camozzi, plus 190. And this is another spot. I mean, most of the lines from top to bottom have stayed fairly steady, nothing crazy. But again, as I mentioned earlier with the Swanson line, climbing, and this line actually dropped the other way. Right now it's Lidis minus 165 and Camozzi is plus 145. So those are two of the kind of bigger moves on the card thus far. A lot of people are supporting Camozzi in this spot over Lidis. I do understand. I mean, Camozzi, I've been a fan of his for a long time since he entered the UFC, honestly, because of his fighting style. I mean, the guy has a ton of heart. The guy always brings it. You know what you're going to get from him. I mean, just an honest effort, and he can compete with some of the best, definitely at 185. Styles make fights, though, and stylistically, that's where Camozzi sometimes gets into issues when he's fighting guys that might be a bad matchup for him. And I think Lidis is actually one of those guys. That's why I opened him a little bit higher than the current line right now. But Camozzi is definitely game, and he's been on a little bit of a roll as of late as well. I mean, his win over Miranda in his last fight, a lot of people were thinking Miranda would probably outstrike Camozzi. I mean, Camozzi did great in that fight. I mean, he really looked good. I think he gained a lot of respect from getting that nod there as well. And then, of course, before that, I know Riggs is kind of at that spot in his career where he's on the decline, but I mean, disposing of Riggs as quickly as Camozzi did was pretty impressive as well. But he's in a different fight here with Lidis. I mean, I understand that Lidis is coming off of kind of a disappointing for performance, I guess, in most people's opinion against Musasi, but it is Musasi, and I mean, Musasi's a whole nother level. Musasi's right there in the title mix always, and he's, I mean, an outstanding fighter, not that Camozzi's not, but it is a different matchup for him. So I can understand the loss that Lidis had there against Musasi, but this is a winnable fight for Lidis, and I do believe that he could follow a similar game plan or path that Jacare had against Camozzi. I mean, they are similar fighters. I know that Jacare is another level, and I do think that Jacare is better than Lidis overall, obviously, but I think they still have similar attributes. Both of the guys like to take the fight to the ground. Both of them have world-class jiu-jitsu skills. I know Jacare, again, is a better finisher on the ground than Lidis, but Lidis is still capable of finishing the fight on the ground as well. And then on the feet, I think it's going to be fairly close. I think Camozzi obviously is going to have a little bit of length, not much though. I think actually Lidis has a couple inches of actual pure reach over Camozzi, which makes things interesting, but Camozzi is going to push a high pace. He's going to stay pretty busy. Lidis, I think, has a more pure knockout power in his hands. And I think that could come into play here as well. Camozzi has to be careful because Lidis has been getting more confident in his striking ability for sure, but the path to victory for Lidis is definitely getting this fight to the ground, and I think he can submit Camozzi on the ground. I mean, that's where Camozzi's kryptonite is still. He has been submitted 5 times in his career, and that's how he basically loses fights outside of some decision losses as well. So it's hard to knock Camozzi out, but you can submit him and finish him. And I think Lidis has the submission skill on the ground that he could possibly get away with that. If not, I think Lidis will probably edge it out on the cards. If it does hit the scorecards, I am expecting it to be a very close decision. We could see 29-28 type of decision, or even a split decision these days with all the judging. So it will be close if it hits the scorecards. I understand that. But I do think that Lidis has a clear path, and I think he should take it here. I think he gets Camozzi to the ground at some point. It won't be easy. Camozzi's takedown defense is decent, but once on the ground, I think Lidis is capable of finishing the fight, and I think he probably does submit Camozzi along the way. So might not be early, but along the way, I think it does happen. So I'm going to pick Lidis to win this fight.
Now, Chris Camozzi has been on a nice run, winning 3 straight, including 2 very one-sided performances. But you just have to go back a little further and you'll see what his kryptonite was. It was Jacare, first-round submission loss. Bruno Santos, 4 takedowns en route to a split decision loss. Rafael Natal, 2 more takedowns, split decision loss. And then Jacare, first-round submission loss. So, though 4 of his 5 losses during his tough little streak that he was on were because of the ground game. And yes, Kamosi is a dangerous, high-paced fighter on the feet, but the path is clear, obvious. Talis Letas needs to not screw around too long on the feet and then just get the fight to the floor and try to either finish it or just stay on top position like he did in his Ed Herman fight. So the path is 100% clear for Talis Letas to get this win. He just needs to follow the smart game plan. On the feet, Letas has actually showcased some improvements there, but I don't know if he's on the same level as Kamosi in terms of pace and volume and everything. In terms of power, definitely. Kamosi is not pillow-fisted, but he's not exactly a big-time finisher on the feet. So I don't think Talis Letas has too much to worry about on the feet unless he gets into extended stand-up exchanges. That's where things kind of have the tides turn a little bit. I mean, Chris Kamosi lands about twice as many strikes per minute as Talis Letas, and he is the more accurate fighter. So Letas should not really mess around on the feet with him, because even though Letas held his own with Michael Bisping in a prolonged stand-up fight, I just do not really like his chances here, mainly at least on the feet, because you look at like the Tim Boach fight where Letas lost the first round convincingly for the most part because he kind of let his opponent dictate the pace. I think Bisping was a little more concerned about Letas's power, so he kind of let Letas lead a little bit in that fight. But if he faces somebody who's aggressive like Kamosi, he could get himself, just outpaced and outworked on the feet. So Letas needs to close the distance, drag Kamosi to the floor, and from there it should relatively be a cinch. Just either secure top position and stay there or work for a submission. It's not like it's impossible to submit Chris Kamosi. Just don't screw around too long in open stand-up exchanges and then get your butt kicked. Because Chris Kamosi, while he's not the most powerful stand-up fighter, he definitely is one of the most voluminous, and he can definitely win rounds. So this is a mildly dangerous fight for Letas. He just has to have a good game plan and good fight IQ. I'm not convinced he'll follow that, but you never know. So I'm assuming he will. So I'm going to pick Talis Letas to win with his ground game. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening. In the featherweight division, we have Dennis Bermudez, who is 16-5, taking on Honey Jason, who is also 16-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Bermudez -230, the comeback on Jason at +170. Right now it's Bermudez -240, the comeback on Jason is +200. So another spot where line basically stayed the same. A little bit more action coming in on Bermudez, a little bit of parlay action going his way as well, but nothing significant because you got to respect Jason as a dog in this spot, especially the way Bermudez goes about his fights in most cases. I mean, Bermudez is a very talented guy, one of the best wrestlers, I think, in grinders at 145 pounds, has some skill on the feet as well, has some speed, has some power, and obviously has a sub game to go along with it. So he's a very complete fighter, but defensively, the guy's definitely flawed. I mean, he gets caught. He's been knocked out before. He does tend to recover quickly when he gets rocked in most cases, but still, I mean, you could count a numerous amount of times, a number of fights that he's really been rocked and stunned. And then some of those submission losses that he has actually has come because he has been kind of wobbled on the feet and then somebody's pouncing a sub with him real quick as well. So he's definitely more susceptible to getting subbed on the ground, especially after being rocked. So he does have some kryptonite as far as his chin, his defense goes, his submission defense goes as well. And he's facing a fighter in Jason that is a finisher. I mean, that's what he does best. That's how he wins fights. So this is stylistically a tough fight for Bermudez. If he wants to get the fight to the ground over Jason, or on the ground with Jason, I mean, that's fine. Jason probably will be okay doing so or letting him have top position because Jason off his back is very active. He goes for triangles, goes for arm bars, go for sweeps, Kimuras, all that sort of thing. I mean, he's a dangerous guy and he's the type of fighter that even though we don't see it as often these days in the sport because everybody is getting more well-rounded and aware about ground skill, I think he is the type of fighter Jason is that he can finish still on the ground. So he's very capable of doing so. So tough fight for Bermudez when he wants to typically grind his opponents out and get the fight to the floor. He's going to have to approach this fight with caution. Then on the feet, Jason has some technical skill, but he does get a little bit aggressive at times, and sometimes it's wild aggression that is effective for him as well. So with Bermudez's chin being a little bit suspect, I mean, Jason's going to come to fight. Jason has enough power on the feet to actually catch that chin of Bermudez and make life interesting there as well. So if it hits the scorecards, I mean, I have to go with Bermudez here because I think he is going to win the fight. If he doesn't get finished, he should do enough to outpoint Jason. I think that is a pretty clear way for him to win. And then, of course, Bermudez, I wouldn't be shocked if he does catch Jason and possibly knock him out along the way too because Jason's chin is a little bit suspect as well. He's been finished a couple times in that way. So it's tough. I don't think Bermudez knocks Jason out. I think it's more of a decision type of win for Bermudez, and it's probably more of an inside type victory if Jason does pull it off. But I mean, both these guys do have ways to win the fight, and it really is more of a toss up in my opinion. And the line probably is a tad bit high, to be honest with you. So it is a dog or pass situation. As far as a pure pick goes though, yeah, I've been kind of going back and forth on this. I could really see myself picking Jason to win this fight, but I guess I'm going to go with the favorite here in Bermudez because I think if he doesn't get finished, he probably wins a fight. So hopefully he can pretty much withstand what Jason has to offer and get the nod here. But man, it is a tough fight. And especially, like I said, with the chin factor with Bermudez, you never know, or with his fight IQ at times getting caught up in some tough spots on the ground, you never know. So it's not a confident type of pick for sure. It's Bermudez for me, but it is a dog or pass situation again, and there could very well be some value on Jason as an underdog here.
This is a mildly tricky fight. I mean, Honey Jason is always dangerous. I mean, he has some power on the feet, and he has a very, very dangerous ground game, especially off of his back. He has a great triangle choke. He has good sweeps. He has great submissions in general. So he's definitely a finisher, and that is the issue Nick brought up. If Jason's going to win this fight, it is going to be by finish, and Dennis Bermudez is finishable. Now, he's not easy to submit. He did get submitted in his UFC debut in the tough finale, but since then, the only time he's ever been submitted was because he got hurt on the feet first, and then Ricardo Lamas just sunk in a choke that he was unable to get out of. But for the most part, Bermudez is just a physical presence in the octagon. He is extremely strong, has great wrestling, and has a little bit of pop on the feet. His kryptonite, realistically, has been his chin is not very good. Now, only one person has ever been able to truly knock him out, and that was Jeremy Stevens with just this insane knee back in Vegas of July 2015. But for the most part, Bermudez has great wrestling. He charges forward. He puts his opponents on their back. He beats them up on the ground, potentially looks for submissions. And then on the feet, he's a bit more wild and crazy. He can get himself in trouble on the feet because he gets suckered into brawls at times. And when you don't have a great chin and you just keep throwing and playing with fire, you can get into situations like when Lamas hurt him and then submitted him, or where he was having a fight of the year type of battle against Stevens and then ate a giant knee. So there is definitely an opening here for Jason to pull it out, but I think with how inefficient Jason has been, how rarely he's been inside the cage. I mean, he fought, it's been over a year since he fought because of a steroid situation. He got drug tested and his last fight got turned into a no contest. And then he hadn't fought in a year before that. So basically he's fought twice in the last 2 years, not even. So, I do honestly think that with the cage rust, with potentially coming off of steroids, I have to favor Dennis Bermudez, who is just stronger, more focused, and higher ranked at this point, and deservedly higher ranked because he has beaten better people than Jason. So I think Bermudez can pull this out. I think he can win a decision. I think he can also win by TKO. I don't exactly see Bermudez pulling off a submission in this fight, but I can definitely see him pounding Jason out from top position. Just has to watch out for those submissions, and he definitely has to check his chin a little bit. So hopefully Bermudez has been working on some of those things, but if not, maybe Jason is a live dog, but I'm going to side with Bermudez. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have another featherweight contest between Yair Rodriguez, who is 8-1, and Alex Cesaris, who is 12-8 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Rodriguez -350, the comeback on Cesaris at +250. And right now, over five times, it is -310 for Rodriguez. The comeback on Cesaris is at +255. So again, line margins have tightened up a little bit. There has been some two-way action coming in on this fight as well, because not long ago, the line was just under 300. It was dropping down closer to almost 2.5 to 1, and then it's got back up a little bit as well. So strong opinions on this fight. A lot of people believe Cesaris is live as an underdog here in this spot against Rodriguez, and a lot of people believe Rodriguez will probably blow through Cesaris and continue his kind of uprise in the UFC. Tough one, because I can see it going both ways as well here. I mean, obviously you have to favor Rodriguez a little bit more. He is the more hyped prospect. He's younger a little bit. I think he's a little bit more solid as far as chin goes, as far as sub defense goes. You could trust Rodriguez a little bit more, but he still has his flaws, and he still has definitely some issues he has to iron out along the way, and one of them being cardio. I think cardio definitely hinders him a little bit as he goes. He hasn't been really tested and gone into deep waters that often. I mean, when he does in the past go a little bit deeper in like a 3-round fight, he does tend to slow down. So 5 rounds, it's going to be interesting to see if he can go 5 rounds strong and if he's addressed that cardio issue a little bit. Because if he can go strong, obviously he's going to be able to outpoint Cesaris along the way here and get the nod, but that's not why he's favored though. He's favored because stylistically, this is kind of a tough matchup for Cesaris. I mean, Rodriguez, his unorthodox striking ability that's very effective with his movement, with his kicks, with everything he throws at you, it's just kind of hard to defend against. I mean, look at his win over Feely. That was impressive. I wasn't shocked that he won the fight, but to put Feely out like he did was kind of a head scratcher, because Feely's a pretty solid opponent. So that was very impressive for Rodriguez. You could tell he's getting better and better. I kind of wish that fight would have played out a little bit longer so we see Rodriguez get tested more, but you got to give him credit where credit's due. I mean, he finished a very tough opponent quickly. So Rodriguez is that type of fighter that he could go out there and blow fighters out. And Cesaris has shown in the past that defensively there is a bit of a concern for him as well. I mean, he has been knocked out before. In the past, he does get wobbled often in fights. He's another one of these guys that does seem to recover most of the time fairly quickly, but he gets himself in bad spots when he does get rocked, or when he has been put out in the past before, that's not a good thing. And then at the same time, Cesaris is one of these guys that he makes a mistake on the ground, gets himself put in a bad spot, and he has been submitted. Now, his submission defense is improving. It is getting better, but against a very talented grappler, he could be in some trouble there as well. So Rodriguez has all of those attributes. I mean, he's a talented striker, could put Cesaris out on the feet. I think Rodriguez has enough ground game that he could sub Cesaris as well. So this is a tough stylistic matchup for both fighters. Now, if Cesaris could kind of survive, I think, the first couple rounds, he can win this fight. I think he could actually stop Rodriguez as it goes, because offensively, Cesaris is pretty good. He's underrated, in fact. He's got a pretty good stand-up game. He's got a pretty good submission game to go along with it. He has wrestling that he can actually utilize in this spot. I think he could probably get some takedowns on Rodriguez, especially if Rodriguez starts wearing down and slowing down as the fight goes on a little bit more. It should be a little bit easier for him. So Cesaris is a very well-put-together offensive fighter. It's just defensively where you have to be concerned. So this is a test for both gentlemen for sure. I have to lean with Rodriguez because obviously the UFC is giving this push for a reason. I think they even matched this fight for Rodriguez for a reason, because Cesaris is at this point, he's respectable enough in an opponent that it would look good with a quality win over a guy like that on your resume. And Rodriguez could kind of continue to get pushed up the ladder if matched up properly in the right way. And this is obviously one of those matchups. So I'm not 100% confident in Rodriguez's win here, because I think there's still some flaws and the hype around him is probably a little bit more than he deserves right now. I don't think he's as good as everybody thinks, But he's talented. He's only 23 years old. He's improving fight by fight. The UFC's backing him right now. I think he's got good people surrounding him as well, and he is going to improve. So Rodriguez is definitely potentially the real deal. I mean, we'll see how he does play out in his career and if he can address some of those flaws that I just mentioned. But outside of that, it is his fight to win or lose, and I do believe that he gets the job done here and he gets the win.
Alex Caceres took a huge leap in his last fight, moving up to featherweight and dominating Cole Miller the way he did. I mean, he was in Cole Miller's face. He was showcasing major improvements in his striking. He was hurting Miller repeatedly. He was aggressive. He pushed a high pace. That was about as good as Alex Caceres has ever looked in his entire career. Same thing can be said about Yair Rodriguez, though. I mean, he was facing a stiff test in Andre Feely, and he passed that test with flying colors. I think before that fight, people were just kind of making fun of some of the attacks that Yair was throwing at people, saying those are ineffective, they're a waste of energy, that's why he slows down in the third round, because he uses all his energy and gas on silly attacks that don't hurt anybody. And then what happened? He hurt Feely with a crazy attack and then finished him with a crazy attack. So he clearly has been working on some of those high risk attacks with his wild kicks, switch kicks, spinning kicks, flying knees, you name it. I mean, the guy literally throws the kitchen sink at his opponent at times. And it looks like he's been working on the technique to make them a little bit more effective, to make them a little bit more accurate. And it worked. I mean, Andre Feely's a tough customer, and he had no chance when some of those kicks landed. So against a guy like Alex Caceres, who was knocked out pretty easily by Francisco Rivera, I just think if any of those attacks land, like, solidly, then Caceres is just going to get put out cold. Now, Caceres is a tough customer, and he has a solid, well-rounded game, but I'm definitely concerned for him here because it does, as Nick mentioned, feel like the UFC is just trying to build Yair Rodriguez into a superstar in the featherweight division, and Caceres is just a bit of a speed bump along the way. Now, in terms of ground game, Yair Rodriguez has a very unorthodox ground game. Just all kinds of crazy sweeps and attacks and wild submissions that he throws up at his opponents, just one after another that he chains together. Caceres has a good ground game as well. I can see Rodriguez overwhelming him a little bit though. So I see Rodriguez just being the better overall fighter in just about every facet of mixed martial arts here. I do think that while Yair is young, he is one of the brighter up-and-coming prospects in the entire UFC. I think he does have that complete package. If he has one flaw, I'm sure Nick brought it up, it's his conditioning. Because he's so high energy, because he goes for all these unorthodox attacks, he does run out of steam. And he has run out of steam traditionally in the third round. He would win the first two doing all this crazy stuff, and then he'd give away the third round because he was getting a little tired. Now, this is a five-round fight, so if he goes out there and runs out of gas after the second round, then the door is definitely open for Alex Caceres to pull this one out. It just all depends on if Rodriguez has taken any steps to improve his conditioning. We haven't really seen it because his last fight was a quick finish, so maybe that's something that he has been working on. We just don't know, but it is definitely a big concern because he has gassed out in three-round fights, and then this is a five-round fight. Now, I'm not saying Alex Caceres is a cardio machine because he slowed down in the third round of his fight against Cole Miller too, but the door is definitely open if Caceres can weather that early, wild, crazy storm that Yair Rodriguez is going to bring. But I'm just not convinced that Caceres does survive that. So I'm going to pick Yair Rodriguez. I think he probably TKOs Alex Caceres at some point. So that'll do it for a full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 92. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker Premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOB Premium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this week.